You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This is Kick-Ass News. I'm Ben Mathis.
You did not kill your therapist.
I'm pretty sure I did.
It was actually a really big deal to me.
Of course, it's just not like your child or something.
Well, I don't have a child.
Thank God, right?
Thank God I don't have a child.
A child that died.
That was a clip from the new Showtime comedy series Work in Progress, a funny and uniquely human comedy starring and co-created by Chicago improv mainstay Abby McEnany. The show that's loosely based on her life follows the self-identified, struggling fat queer dyke as she copes with obsessive-compulsive disorder and tries to find love in the big city while navigating evolving ideas about gender and sexuality, surviving hostile ladies' rooms, and trying not to stick her foot in her mouth. And today, Abby joins me on the podcast to discuss her start in Chicago's improv scene, how her one-woman show got turned into a series for Showtime, and how she decided to create her own breakout role when no one else would cast her. She reveals how Julia Sweeney's Saturday Night Live character, Pat, made her life a living hell for a while, and how she convinced Julia to join the supporting cast of her show. Abby talks about her perennial problem of getting misgendered in the women's restroom, how the 51-year-old sometimes feels like a square in the younger gay and transgender community, and why avoiding all social media is a matter of life and death for her. Plus, I get an education in gender identity, I mispronounce Abby's name a couple dozen times, and we bond over the power of gingham to cross all gender lines. Coming up with Abby McEnany in just a moment. Let me give you a proper intro here.
Okay.
McEnany?
McEnany.
God damn it.
It's okay.
I'm going to screw it up.
McEnany,
I know.
McEnany. Yep,
okay.
Perfect.
All right. Abby McEnany is a mainstay of the Chicago improvisational comedy scene and regularly performs at I.O. Chicago. She wrote and performed 2 one-woman shows. They're Not All Winners and Work in Progress. The latter, this is going to be a rough morning.
You know what? You're working. This is perfect because this is how I am. Okay. So I'm loving every second.
Yeah, this is,
this is awesome for
first
me.
Thing I'm doing after the holiday. The latter of which led to the creation of her new comedy series for Showtime. Work in Progress features McEnany. Thank you.
Yeah, you got it.
I'm going to screw it up so many times today.
I give zero fucks, by the way.
Okay.
McEnany.
Work in Progress features McEnany as a fictionalized version of herself, a 45-year-old self-identified fat queer dyke whose misfortune and despair unexpectedly lead her to a vibrantly transformative relationship. Work in Progress premieres Sunday, December 8th at 11 p.m. Eastern and Pacific. Abby McEnany.
Hi.
Did I get it right?
McEnany. Yeah, it's okay. Oh, you got it. Just, yeah.
Abby McEnany.
You got it.
Ah, Wow. Okay.
You nailed it.
I'm a hot mess.
No, are you kidding? Well, then we have a lot in common. I'm consistently a hot mess.
Okay. By the way, I was just with my wife as I was telling you about our doctor's appointment, and she swears that you and I dress alike.
Oh, yeah. When she watched that show. You're wearing gingham right now. You're wearing gingham and jeans, right?
Yeah. She watched that show. She's like, you two kind of dress alike.
I just have a little less facial hair at the moment.
I know. Yeah. So I don't even know what that means. Does that mean that I dress like a queer dyke or you dress like a straight male?
No, I don't think that's it. Okay. I'm a masculine presenting person. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But, now, my sister always makes fun. She's like, so what are you going to wear? Gingham? And I was like, I think I wear so much. I love gingham. And I was wearing, but then like our lovely costume designer, like I just had a lot of gingham, and now I think I'm like, oh God, I don't think I like gingham anymore.
Oh no,
just for myself. But like, but who knows?
Gingham.
Oh, I love it, but yeah.
Now I mentioned in the intro that you describe yourself as a queer dyke,
yes.
Not a lesbian.
Yes.
For those of us who are still figuring things out,
sure.
And I was too lazy to Google.
No.
What's the difference?
Well,
help
actually,
me out
I
here.
Think it's funny because like I think identity is so personal,
mm-hmm.
And so I don't know anybody else that, I mean, I think anybody can find what they feel comfortable identifying themselves as.
Mm-hmm.
I never felt like lesbians, I don't know. And also things mean different things to different people.
Right.
So.
It's very confusing these days.
It can be. I just think, and also God bless, if somebody says there's something, then that let them be that, mm-hmm. Right? So lesbians, like, so I dated in the show, my character Abby meets a young trans man, mm-hmm. who is a waiter, and then about 10 years ago, I was in D.C. for a month doing a show for Second City, and I met a young trans man as a waiter, and once I started dating Alex, I can't call myself a lesbian anymore because I'm denying Alex's identity because lesbians date
right.
women.
Okay.
So I was like,
okay.
"That I can't, I'm not a lesbian,
okay.
right? Because that's like I don't want to do anything to take away Alex's identity as a man.
Yeah.
So
got it. That makes
I
sense. Start,
yeah. So then I
totally
just I then I started identifying myself more. I was like lesbians date women. Dykes can do whatever the fuck they want. And then I also feel like I'm queer. I say I'm dyke identified, and that's where I came up with queer dyke. I made it up for myself.
Okay.
Some people are like get pissed off about it. I'm like, God bless. I think when the like fluidity, the idea of fluidity at least came more in my world in the last 3 years, both sexual and gender fluidity. That is makes a lot of sense to me, and uh-huh. I think I really feel like both of those things make a lot of sense to who I am.
Yeah.
I was at a really good friend of mine, Dan White's wedding, and he was introducing me to his cousin. He's like, and this is Abby, and he looked at me. I was like, she, her at the moment, to be determined, you know. So I am a she, her. That's how I identify now. I don't know. Identity is kind of beautiful.
Yeah.
And I feel like for me, it's always going to be open to change, and who cares except, I mean, I think people do care. I mean to say, like, let people, you know.
Sure.
I also I'm a verbal vomiter, as you can see, and I don't think I hide very well. So let's just get that out of the way.
Yeah, I mean, so much is changing these days, mm-hmm. and it's funny. Just a few days ago, I was with my sister-in-law who teaches up in Northern California, and she was telling me how, I guess now the teachers have been taught to, I guess at a certain grade, the kids can choose to self-identify, but prior to that, they just have decided to blanket refer to children as they,
hey.
And
wow,
instead
yeah.
of his or her,
yep.
there. But apparently, all of the English teachers are pissed off now because it's not proper grammar.
That is so funny. I mean, I had a very good friend of mine who, you know, very, you know, as ally as, you know, as straight whites this guy could be. I mean, like lovely, but this was like 3 years ago, and they were just like, would argue with me, like, it just isn't grammatically correct. Like, I, you know, they
okay.
is, you know, they.
So that's not an uncommon
well, yeah. And
argument,
it was just so
though.
Funny. I was like, but I don't. He's like, and I read an article. I'm like, yeah, I don't know if you as a straight, white, cis, Catholic guy should be the arbiter of how queers and gender non-variant people refer to themselves. He's like, well, all right. But he was still kind of pissed off. And now he's on board. But it took him about, it took him about two and a half years to get there.
Okay.
So, you know, we're all trying, like, hopefully most people are trying to learn, and you know, I mess up all the time and stuff. I don't know everything, and hopefully we live, we can like create a society or create communities where people can learn and be honest with each other.
Yeah, I actually really appreciate that you use this series even to own up to your own confusion sometimes and kind of the predicament of going from being kind of the cool lesbian in the 90s to being, I don't know, a little...
You thought that was a cool lesbian in the 90s? No, that's like, very sweet.
I feel like in the 90s, that was a very trendy, cool thing to be. That's when everyone decided that they wanted a lesbian best friend or they wanted a lesbian friend. So I feel like there were a lot of straight people acquiring their token lesbian friend in the
90s. That is news to me, Ben. where are you from?
Well, I'm actually from Texas.
I'm upset. Okay.
You know, Texas is very forward-thinking, very open-minded.
You know.
They have that reputation.
Yeah, well, they do. They do indeed. Holy smokes, that makes me laugh. That's not what I encountered.
Well, I think you're a cool lesbian.
Oh, that's very well, queer dyke. But thank you very much.
Sorry. Okay, in the 90s, you were a cool lesbian.
I mean, I've always been a dork and never been cool. But yes, and hey, you know, that's okay.
But what I was gonna say is that I appreciate that in this show, you kind of own up to your own awkwardness, you know, kind of feeling like a little bit of a square in the whole gay transgender community of a younger generation now at this point.
I think so.
And that's where a lot of the comedy comes from.
I think, you know, when I met Alex, you know, I originally misidentified them because now in the last year, they now identify as genderqueer. So they go by they, them now. When I first identified Alex as the hottest baby dyke on the face of the planet, like just like it says in the pilot. And then, you know, we were emailing and they were like, actually, I'm a trans man. I was like, cool, let's go out. And then, I mean, I just think the show, I think, you know, in the pilot, it's a very lily white, cis woman homosexual experience, right? Like, you see all my best friends, and they're lesbians, they're cisgender, and they're white, and it's a very like hilariously, in quotes, homogenous community that I'm part of, and then this relationship with this young trans man, it's like I think it shows this beautiful, I call it a queer wonderland, there's just a beautiful array of queer folks. Like, I think if you're living, and I think, I mean, I'm very much in a place of privilege. Like, I have always been, like, my family has been supportive. I have a wonderful
group.
Yeah, I have a wonderful community of friends, like the improv community. Like, when I first was improvising, not a lot of queers there, but, like, you know, always had lots of friends in it, and it's been a lovely place for me. I know it's very problematic for a lot of people who are other, so I'm not saying whatever. My experience has been all right, but I just think that like when young folks come out in a urban a city environment, like it's never. I mean, God bless. It's not going to be cis coming out experience. It's not going to be white. Like if you're a cis white person in the city coming out, your community is going to be filled with gender variant, people of all different gender identities, sexual identities, people of color and different religions, different abilities. I don't know, like different sizes. I mean, there's just such a beautiful thing, and it is eye opening to me. And we wanted to show that, like, this is not just the relationship with Chris is not just because I'm willing to love again, but it's like, whoa, there is a life out here that is supportive and open and embracing.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. You know, and I think, I don't know, I kind of feel like everyone's trying to figure out right now. I mean, no one's written the rule book yet, and everyone's trying to figure it out. And look, I mean, you know, there are some people out there, but there aren't a lot of people out there who are just going around looking to find someone to hurt their feelings,
you know, or
going around trying to offend someone. I mean, well,
there's
a very vocal small minority in this country of about 30%, which I guess is not that small a minority.
That's huge. Funny because I like, you know, it's funny. And I say like, I'm not on social media.
Oh yeah. That's true.
Because I hate it. I also
never have been.
Never have been. And,
really?
And that was I thought people are like, yes, you got to join Facebook. Years ago, I was like, no. And some people are like, you got to join Twitter. Like when Twitter came, I was like, no. somebody once said, like, well, Abby, it's really going to hurt your career. And I was like, well, it'll hurt my career more if I'm not alive. Because, like, I mean, I'm, like, you know, I'm like, clearly a very depressed person. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I'm knocking on wood. Like, my meds are working pretty well now, and my therapist is awesome.
But, yeah, that could totally screw with you.
Well, and also, there's so much vitriol out there. And I think as a queer, fat woman, I find tons of hate out there. I think there are tons of people looking to tear people down. Mm-hmm. And also, again, I come from an amazing life of privilege. Like, I grew up upper middle class. Like, I went to college. I didn't have to take student loans. Like, that is, like, crazy. Like, mm-hmm. you know, I've been able to live this life of a family that loves me and friends. I don't know. So, yeah, I wish I thought that there weren't hateful people out there. But I have to say, like, you know, I think it's easy, especially after this horrific election of 2016, where even up to that, like, it was hard. Like, if you stay in your house and you just read the news, you can start thinking that it's a burning fucking shit fire of humanity out there. And the second you leave your house, you're like, no, they're lovely people. Yeah. I don't know. That was a real big rant of, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I get it. No, I completely get it. But, yeah, you don't feel like you're missing out on anything? Like, with everything going on politically and the impeachment and all that, you don't feel like you're tuned out to that? Or you want to be tuned out to that?
I think the way to be tuned in is not to be on social media. Mm-hmm. Like, I think you can, like, find trusted news sources and go there. Like, I think, when I hear about people, like, what they, I mean, you're not going to change any minds of anybody on Facebook. It's like a tons, and I don't see it. I've heard of it. Like, people are like, well, fuck you. You know, you're a bigot, whatever. There's no room for discourse. There's no room for love and understanding and conversation. So, like, no, I'm not missing out. I think I'm, like, I'm living the dream.
Yeah.
Like, you know? And, and I think I was, it's a tough time. And I remember, like, right after the election. So Lindy West, do you know who Lindy West is? Uh-huh. She wrote Shrill.
Yeah,
and
sure.
And when I read that book, I had followed her, like, she was a writer on Jezebel, and I was like, who's this Lindy West? Like, I've loved her forever. And then Shrill came out, and really, I just think it's the most beautiful book, and it was kind of like my Bible and stuff. And she was coming for, like, Chicago Humanities Week, or she was doing something in Chicago, and, you know, I bought a ticket to go see her, and it was, like, a week after the election in 2016. Huh. And we got everybody was sort of shell-shocked, and she was up there. She was like, well, I think today's going to be a lot different than what we thought we were going to talk about today. And what she said, I took to heart. She's like, people are like, what do you suggest? And she's like, if you have the means, support journalism, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if you have means, find papers that you think do good journalism, mm-hmm. whether or not they lean your way or not, support them, subscribe. And I was like, that's what to do. So, like, now, you know, I subscribe, like, to the New York Times, the Boston Globe, the Washington Post, the Atlantic, whatever, and get these, you know, and that's, I think...
You.
That's how you, I don't know. I rarely watch the news because, like.
Oh, yeah. Even that's gotten inflammatory.
Honestly, like, people are like, oh, are you going to watch the debates? I'm like, well, this is pretty weak of me. I hate conflict. People are just yelling and putting each other down. I don't know.
Yeah. I get it.
And I also, like, I love that, like, you know, I read some comments of other things, being like, oh, you're such, like, the triggered liberals are so afraid. So come at me, bro. I mean, I know it's coming. You know, you just have to. I know there's stuff out there. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, and this whole thing. Where does your sister-in-law teach? Is she in San Francisco or outside of San Francisco?
Yeah, it's a private school for dyslexic kids.
In San Francisco?
Yeah, in the Bay Area.
Bay Area, okay. Because, like, I went to high school in the Bay Area.
Oh,
so,
you
like,
did?
Yeah, we moved around a lot growing up. So
we
moved there when I was in ninth grade. And I love, like, when people talk about, I mean, I bet, like, I'm just imagining the community around that school and the people hear about it, like, oh, can you believe that they learned to do whatever.
Right.
I mean, you know, you got to just find your way and be hopefully open and as loving as you can.
So you're not from Chicago originally, huh?
I'm not. No, I moved around tons growing up. And I moved to Chicago for college, and I just stayed. So I've lived in Chicago since 1986.
Okay.
I'm 51. I'm 41 in the 45 in the show. I'm 51. We started writing it when I was 40.
You're starting off with a lie.
A lie.
How can the audience ever trust you?
Right, thank you.
I was wondering about that.
I always tell people I'm a fucking hypocrite. Like, I say I'm a really private person, and then I just barf out all this stuff about my life. So anyway, so when I did my storytelling show called Work in Progress, mm-hmm. which was all just real life stories, one of my very best friends, Brendan Dowling, he directed that show, and he's like one of the funniest. I mean, just the Chicago world is, it's so beautiful and funny and smart. Anyways, so I did this thing about how I'm very afraid of using restrooms, public restrooms. And it's like, cause you know, it can be terrifying. And I was like, you know, I'm this middle-aged woman, and it's so crazy that I'm afraid to use bathrooms. And he was like, we were rehearsing. He's like, you're middle-aged? You think you're going to live to 96? And then you, like, pretend to be drinking and smoking a cig? Anyways, so I said I was 48 in the show, right? Uh-huh. And then when Tim Mason, who's my co-creator and co-writer of the pilot, and now Lily Wachowski is also a co-writer of the other 7 episodes, when we were doing the tagline for our proof of concept scene, he wrote, like, you know, we were like going to say, we thought it would be funny to be, it's like, it's a coming of age story.
Mm-hmm.
So he wrote a coming of age story of a 45-year-old dyke. and he put it in and we sent it out. I was like, 45? He's like, aren't you 45? I'm like, I'm 48. Anyways, so it's 45. And then it took 3 years for us to get it made. So, yeah. But yeah, anybody could be like, you're a hypocrite. Yes, I am.
We're going to take a quick break, and then I'll be back with more with Abby McEnany. When we come back in just a minute. For over 115 years, Oris has been making purely mechanical watches in Holstein, Switzerland. Staying true to a rich heritage, Oris is one of the few Swiss watch companies to remain independently owned and operated. Because of this independence, Oris has the freedom to follow its own path. They're focused on bringing change for the better, which means making choices that are ecologically, socially, and financially responsible. That includes ocean conservation and recycled plastic partnerships. Of course, that's along with Oris's more than century-long commitment to making inventive, high-functioning Swiss-made watches that serve a real purpose, and at a price that makes sense. The best possible watch for the money. Comprised of 4 themes, diving, aviation, motorsport, and culture, Oris watches are made for everyday wear. Shop the many different unique styles at oris.ch/kick. You're sure to find one that's your style and suits your taste. That's oris.ch/kick. And now, back to the podcast. But you're very honest about a lot of things in this show. And the bathroom thing is fascinating to me. I don't want to say that's a weird term to hear. But
no, I think it was
interesting. It was funny. It was revealing. I didn't know that. I guess you had this problem for a long time. Yeah. Getting misgendered and yelled at by women in a ladies' room who think that you're a guy or pervert or whatever. Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, everything. Yeah. Like, I mean, you know.
That really happens.
It really happens. And, you know, it was so crazy. We were out here for the TCA's. For a day of press in August, and I'm here like it's like a highlight. Like we start shooting this, like my dream's coming true, right? Like we're doing the show. I'm working with my dear friend, like Tim, and then I'm working with another dear friend, Lily Wachowski.
Yeah, the Matrix fame.
Yes. And other things. Honestly, like the fact I mean, I've known her for like 3.5 years, and she's so lovely, and I'm always like. She took a $50 million pay cut to do this show. Like I was saying, you know, so we're out there. I'm like, this is crazy. Like when I came in, you were like, congratulations. I'm like, this is bonkers. Like I cannot believe it still.
Again, huh?
It doesn't seem real. And I'm so grateful. And it is so crazy. We did some interviews and then we did the panel. But like right before the panel, I went to the bathroom and like a lady, a woman came into his bathroom and she did that whole thing, like looking at the sign, looking at me. And I'm like, this is happening. And we were on the panel in front of journalists. I'm like, it just happened.
Wow.
Like, I think a lot of people think I make it up and I don't. It can be harrowing And I think a lot of it depends, like, I always say, like, when I get misgendered, like, I get it. I'm masculine presented. I want to be masculine. I say, yeah, now I, you know, when you're like, how do you spell they? Anyways.
Yeah, I think you're trying to make it more feminine.
No, thanks. Yeah, but masculine presenting. So I get when I'm called sir or whatever. My problem is the reaction. Like, if I go, oh, either say I'm not a sir, or they hear my voice and then they know. Mm-hmm. If the reaction is like, sorry, I'm like, hey, it happens all the time. I don't care. It's the reaction that is, well, you should grow your hair. Somebody said that to me in a store. You should wear women's clothes. A friend of mine said that to me about 8 years ago.
A friend?
Oh, yeah.
So, are they still your friend?
Yeah. Well, they purportedly, like, they don't think, you know, this was like 8 years ago, and they purportedly loved me. She's on my side. And she was like, well, you know, maybe you wouldn't have a problem if you wore women's clothes. I was like, okay. So, like, you know, whatever. My problem is with the bigotry of the reaction or the hatred or the danger or whatever. And also to be in a bathroom, be screamed at by an older lady before you get on a plane. It's like, it's not fun.
Yeah. And I love it in the show. I don't know if you really do this in real life, but you go, when you go into the bathroom, you speak in a much higher voice to make it clear that you're a woman.
I mean, that is legit real. And like, really? It was funny. I was in Boston, like maybe, I don't know, 5 years ago. Like, we had a family friend who died. So I flew back to Boston and we were at the funeral. And then I got snowed in. I was supposed to take a flight back to Chicago, and it was like this big blizzard. I remember the one thing good about it is that I'm a Patriots fan. I know lots of trash people in that, but whatever. Always been a Patriots fan. And then, like, so I was able to, like, the Patriots played that night. We got taken off the plane because I went to my sister's house. Blah, blah, blah. Oh, my God. I totally forgot where we're going with this. Crap. What were we going?
The high voice thing.
Oh, the high voice. Anyways. So then, like, I mean, we were like, that's hilarious. I'm like, where do we go? I've only had coffee. No. Anyway. So we, Lizzie and I, my middle sister, we went to a movie. It was like the third day, and we were actually able to use the car. And we went to the movie, and it was like this movie theater, you know. And I was like, okay, I'm gonna use the bathroom before we go home. And I heard somebody come in. I'm like, like, I do a cough, and I was like, hello, you know. And she goes, Abby, it's me. I mean, she knew I did that, but because I did a storytelling thing about it like years ago, and she was like, hello. I mean, anyways, I really do it. It's like it's a safety thing, and get it out of the way.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And I love that scene. That's probably my favorite scene in the entire season of the show.
The last scene of the fourth episode.
Well, yeah, because you finally are fed up and you start going off on these women in the bathroom. But then it almost spirals into like this Zucker Brothers-esque scene of you. That really, it comments on our assumptions about all kinds of different people, from disabled to guys to nuns, you name it.
I mean, the thing is,
I thought that was so brilliantly honest.
I mean, and it's funny because that scene, I mean, I am a horrible human being. Like, I'm like, my life is harder than anybody else's. Clearly, that's not true. You know, like, I was pushed to this place, and I'm like, say my life is harder than anybody else in the world. And like, that is clearly not true. Like, you know, and so that's part of the comedy, hopefully, is that, like, you know, you spiral, you spiral, and then like, and also like allowing somebody to have really bad and ugly moments, right? Like, not everybody's always at their best,
right?
You know, and that shows
absolutely
my character. I'm doing quotes as a horrible human being, you know? I don't know. Yeah.
Now, the show centers around you, but you have a perfect supporting cast, including the great Julia Sweeney SNL fame.
Yes.
She plays a supporting role on the show, and you end up calling her out for her character, Pat, which hopefully people remember, or have a certain generation remember.
It is.
SNL in the 90s, Pat. Yeah. I'm trying to think how to describe Pat, but
Pat was
a problem for you, right?
Well, yeah, so Pat was a character that Julia did, and the thing was, the premise was that nobody knew if Pat was a man or a woman.
Right.
Right. So, and also, it's funny because when Pat was on SNL, like, I mean, I laughed along with everybody else. I thought it was hilarious. When it stopped being funny to me, it was like, and Pat was off the air, I would be called Pat. And, you know, that's not a compliment. You know, and it'd be either like guys, like I would like frat bros or like, you know, financial bros or just any bro guy. Mm-hmm. Bro, like, come at me, guys. I don't, whatever. I'm just waiting for all the vitriol to come in. But anybody, you know, like,
you'll never know because you're not on social media.
So. Yeah, but yeah, that's true. That's true.
They're just talking to the
wind.
That's
true. Yeah. You'll be like, Abby, I got a lot of hate mail for you. But the thing that was horrible is that it happened to me in a lesbian bar by a lesbian.
What?
So this is
a lesbian called you Pat?
Yes. Obviously in a disparaging way. And it was like, and it's the late 90s. Being queer in the late 90s, I mean, like, I was in Chicago. I lived in where a bunch of queers lived, and like, I felt comfortable. But like, you know, there had to be safe spaces. You had to go to safe space. So like, this bar was a lesbian bar, and it should have been a safe space. Mm-hmm. And this lesbian called me Pat, and it's just like, where am I safe? You know?
Yeah. If you don't fit into everyone's taxonomy what you're supposed to be,
exactly right.
You know, what and a person's I, supposed
yeah.
to be.
And so, like, yeah. you know, I think the idea, I think there's a queer community. I think the idea, like, when that happened, and I've gotten some stuff, I was like, sometimes the term lesbian community to me seems like a misnomer. Just because of the experience that I've had.
Mm-hmm.
Being judged for being conventionally ugly or like fat or like masculine presenting or, you know, whatever. So like, you know, I don't know. Yeah. So I just want to like, it's, and that's important too. Like just because you fall into a certain thing, like you're queer or whatever, like it doesn't mean you're not a bigot.
Yeah.
And I got to say it again. I make mistakes all the time. I want to be better about everything, you know, and like that's all. I just want to say, like, well, you messed up. Yeah. I know.
Yeah. Every time I hear the term lesbian community, it reminds me of an episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm where Larry David is bragging about being a friend of the lesbian community. Like, it's this, like, and I think the whole premise is like something. Rosie O'Donnell is like kind of the de facto president or queen of the lesbian community. Hilarious. So if you're in with Rosie, you're in with every lesbian in the world.
That's a riot.
I'm curious, what other shows inspired you when you were doing this? Because I feel like there's a certain amount of curbishness to it.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, I love a lot of different shows. I never really watch Curb.
Mm-hmm.
I think obviously he's a genius. There's a lot, you know, it's this sort of like, there's a, and I've had friends that were, you know, like did day parts on Curb, and they were like, it's the most brilliant experience. And so this is not meant as disrespect at all, because obviously he is a comedic genius. I think there's a lot of negativity and like, you know, stressful situations, which is ripe for comedy, but it's just like, as somebody who is very anxious and unhappy sometimes, but I'm a very anxious person. I get stressed out, like watching this play, like it's not a calm experience. Does that make sense? Like,
I think your own story.
Curb.
Okay,
watching Curb is very difficult.
Oh, I know people who find it very stressful.
That's what I'm saying. Like,
they empathize with him a little bit, and like, he's always screwing up.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't watch because it's always like there's always something that it's never like, oh, I'm going to watch this and enjoy it. It's always very stressful. So I don't watch, like, that wasn't an inspiration. Yeah. You know, I can't go to a show that was an inspiration. Really? I don't know. I think.
Well, it was based off of your one-woman show.
Yeah, it was based off a storytelling. Yeah. I got to say, like, I mean, there are tons of shows that were brilliant. Like, Brooklyn 911.
Mm-hmm.
No, Brooklyn 99. it's just, that's like, that to me right now is an example of a perfect ensemble
so
comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I love that show. And then, I just think that's brilliant. And like one of my favorite comedies of all time is Parks and Rec.
Oh yeah,
I love that. Like, but I don't know. I don't think that you would see that in our show. But like, I don't know.
Right,
I'm inspired by.
I know that you come from an improv background.
Yes.
Is a lot of this show improvised?
It's all script. So everything was scripted.
Okay.
I think there are some actors on there that are amazing improvisers. So Mary Sohn, who plays my boss, Susan, Celeste.
Oh, she's great.
I know. Celeste is so, she plays, she's been one of my best friends for like 24 years. And I say her name, Peckhouse, somebody was like, that's not how you say it. So sorry. I'm hanging out with Celeste tonight. So sorry, Celeste. She's one of the best. I mean, so Mary Sohn is an amazing improviser. Celeste is an amazing improviser. My friend Kate James is an amazing improviser. She plays the woman who weighs me in at the best self, like a weight loss place. And there are just a lot of parts that were played by improvisers. So when you're in that role and you're people, not only that you like trust implicitly as a person, but also as an improviser, then we were able to play more.
Yeah.
But everything was scripted. I have to say, like, it was great as like the person who my character is based on and the co-writer and the co-showrunner. Like, I mean, I could play around a bit. Yeah.
And I've heard that you've talked about auditioning for commercials and TV series throughout your career. But the problem you ran into was that you didn't always fit into the Hollywood or Madison Avenue narrow idea of who their target audience would be. And I was wondering, was Work in Progress, this new series, somewhat born out of a sense that no one's going to just cast you in something? So you kind of have to create that breakout role for yourself.
Yes. So I would say, like, I wouldn't get auditions. So it's not even I would go in there. They give, you know, because it's like, also, I get it. Why would I, like, why would they bring me on to sell cheeseburgers? Like, I'm like, okay. I'm like, you know, people don't want to be fat. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not going to have me do that. So, and then also for when I would get, I didn't audition very much. And when I did, it wouldn't go well. So, yeah, I started, like, you know, my first one-woman show, like, I want to perform and I want to act and I want to tell stories and stuff like that. And the only way I was like, okay, you have to write for yourself because no, there aren't going to be roles for me. And also I've got to say, there are tons more opportunities now than there were even 5 years ago. I think Orange is the New Black is an amazing, right. I mean, you have women of like different gender. You have transgender women, you have women of color, you have fat women, you got older women, you got like, women of color. I mean, like you have, that is a beautiful array of opportunity. So I'm not saying like this is groundbreaking. I just said like I knew I had to write for myself, and that's why I wrote for myself. Mm-hmm. And somebody's like, well, just become a writer. It's like, I want to perform. So yeah. So this is, I mean, honestly, it is really, it's a dream come true. I still can't believe it.
Yeah.
I can't believe it.
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And I guess it happened fairly quickly because what? You did a pilot for Sundance and you got in then it got picked up by Showtime. I think there was a bidding war from what I've heard.
Well, yeah. So what we did, so like Tim and I, like, so I did this storytelling show in 2016 and Tim Mason, my co-creator, we were going to work on some videos together because his wife is a dear friend of mine. We improvised together. Mm-hmm. She was like, hey, Tim wants to work on this. What do you want to work on? I'm like, it was like, I had just put my show up, so I was still running it. But I was like, I don't know. And my brain was in a good place. Like, my meds were working pretty good. I was feeling creative. I was like, I want to, you know, I think maybe I'll do some videos. And she was like, well, reach out to Tim because he wants to work on his directing reel. Reached out to Mason. We met. I pitched some ideas that were honestly fair to Midland. And then he was like, oh, okay, cool, cool, cool. This is kind of my directing style. He sent me a clip that he had wrote and directed. And then, so I was going to repitch the next week and meet. And then in that weekend, he came to my storytelling show, right? Mm-hmm. And then, so I went and I like repitched these ideas. And again, they weren't fabulous. And he goes, I mean, they would have been fine, but we weren't passionate about him. He's like, why don't we just write a TV show based on the stories? I was like, right on. Huh. And I've always wanted to do that. I'm also a collaborator. I knew I wouldn't do it on my own. And, but also it's a very self-involved thing, right? Like this story is about me. So like you don't go up to, I mean, and there are tons, again, I can't talk about how great Chicago is and the Chicago improv community and the artistic community is so beautiful. But how I didn't want to go up to somebody that I really like loved, trusted, respected and wanted to work with and be like, hey, do you want to dedicate so much time and energy on my story with possibly no payout or payoff, you know?
Right.
So like it really, that's where we started. So we started in 2016 and that first scene in the pilot with the therapist, that was filmed in September of 2016.
Okay.
And then, we had some meetings. We were working in the production company for a while that sold a different show. They were lovely folks. It was not going to be a good fit anyways, but that was pretty devastating. And then we're like, Tim was like, I'm sick of meetings. We should. So we rewrote the pilot a few times, but then we decided like we'd do it as a web series because we were going to do it ourselves. We're like, we just got to make it. And we were going to do it as a web series because like who's going to sit down and watch 24 minutes? Right. So we're like, and then so we funded it ourselves and we did. Yeah, we filmed it in June and July over 3 days in 2018. And
But that's so much better that you already had this team assembled and you're working with people that you know and friends in Chicago and all
phenomenal.
That. So, like, it's not like you're going to networks pitching a show and then they're going to force, you know, some showrunner never met on you and all these people.
It was. Yeah. So, like, we did the pilot. And
you're still kind of like an Arn Gang comedy. Kind of like an Arn Gang comedy.
Yeah.
You're like still like, you know. Yeah. Let's put on a show.
It was very lucky because when we got into Sundance, which still I go, can you believe it? And then we went out to pitch after Sundance. We went out to pitch, and we were in a good position because they had already seen the pilot, so they knew what the show was about. They knew the voice. They knew what we were gonna, you know. So like we were at an advantage of like. Not having anyone. And then it's like this woman who's kind of a mess, and then she's depressed and suicidal, and then she meets this young man, and then, you know, and then she has these friends and a family, whatever. Like, the work, a lot of that work was done.
It's this meets that.
Yeah. And then also, like, I mean, I from the beginning with Tim, and then when we signed on with some EPs, and then we, you know, we got lawyers, whatever, and then we were going out to fish, I was just like, just so you know, I will never sell unless I get to play myself. Uh-huh. Like, I'm not going to sell. The reason that I wrote this, my stories, was because I wanted to perform. So just so you know, I'm not going to sell
it. I can't imagine it without you.
Well, thank you very much. But like, I mean, and they were like, yeah, we got it. But I was like, I need to reiterate. There's no way that
This. These are very personal stories here.
And also, like, I'd rather the show not be made than me not be able to be in it.
Yeah. That's fair.
There's something about it's being 51 and being like, this being my, I mean, being the first thing I've ever done. But I know who I am. I'm surrounded by an amazing community. And, like, I understand this life of failure, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, it's, like, I'm thrilled. I'm the luckiest person. But, like, I'd rather not have that little bit of money or whatever from selling my ideas than and going back to, like, not getting any gigs. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what is it like for you as someone who's done one-woman shows and improv and that kind of thing to suddenly be thrown into a TV show where you have, like, you know, you have to hit your mark and you have to, I mean you've
that was
never
so
done
good.
That before.
Yeah, I got to say.
You got
like,
a crew
so,
around you.
Yeah. So I got to say, we, first of all, having Lily Wachowski as your friend and your mentor and your warrior and, I mean, she is, I can't even, I'm going to get teary. She's so phenomenally amazing and supportive and smart and powerful. And, so that, I mean, that gives you confidence, right? Like, I got to say, when we went out to pitch, I'm like, holy crap, I'm in these meetings. And, but the thing is that, so they had seen the pilot, so they know I'm a mess. Like, I'm like, whoa, like, so that's not a surprise. I don't have to pretend I'm somebody I'm not.
Right.
And then I'm sitting next to Lily fucking Wachowski. Are you kidding me? I mean, like, there was a sense of sort of like, all right. So that was amazing. Like, she's so supportive. And then, I mean, it's bonkers, you know, but when we hired our crew, like, and like our department heads and stuff, it, like Tim and I were like, hey, we've never done this before. And like Tim had directed some commercials. He's never done TV. And I had never been on a professional set before. Like I'd done some Friends of web series, but like, this is bonkers. And like, we had the most amazing crew, I gotta say. And I'd be like, you guys, you know, I don't know what I'm doing. And everybody helped me. Like they took amazing care
of
me. And it was very much a community feel because like we're fairly low budget. And so a lot of people, people were like working, I think, whatever. Everybody worked together, and I mean, I was very well taken care of.
And before we go, I do want to point out that Work in Progress addresses a lot of things, not just gender and sexuality, but fat shaming, mental illness, community, family, all kinds of things. Do you worry about getting pigeonholed as, I don't know what the term would be, the queer show or whatever?
Yeah, I mean, well, it's funny because I think
or
working
with shows. How do you
combat that? Yeah, I think that's a great question. I think I was very concerned, like, I don't want to be pigeonholed as a queer show because it's about so much more. It is about like my goal for this, like the show, and I'm not there. I mean, I'm just saying like my goal is to show people that like, hey, hopefully we can find a world that you can live without shame. Mm-hmm. Right. And when I say that, like I've talked to some classes like, and I'm like, look, I'm not there yet. I'm not ashamed about my gender, sexuality, my age, whatever. I'm very ashamed of my fat. And I come by it honestly, and I mean, I'm not going to hide it. Like, I'm not proud of that. I'm ashamed of it. Anyways, but I honestly, like, working with Showtime, they have been, I mean, it's not, I mean, we are, like, when we were taught, we had a marketing meeting, and, like, we're so lucky to go after the new L word, and so they're
what a great lead-in.
I mean, come on, but, like, But then they're like, but this, we had this big meeting, and they're like, but this isn't a queer show. It's about so much more. So we're going to do some of the Coast stuff, but we're going to do this other stuff because it really, I was worried about being pigeonholed at the beginning, like when we were pitching it and stuff. Well, even before, like where we were going to like submit it, I was like, I don't want to do like a queer festival, even though queer festivals are amazing. I hope there was a lesbian journalist who got pissed off at me for saying that.
Oh, really?
But I just was like, I just think it's not just a queer story.
Yeah.
It's about mental illness, family, community, fat shame, struggling.
Yeah.
Holding on, being like holding on by a thread. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
For whatever it's worth. I mean, it doesn't get much more straight, cis, white, male than me and my wife, I guess, so female. And we absolutely loved it. We thought it was just fantastic. It's so funny.
Thank you.
That means funny,
the world
heartfelt,
to me.
Wonderful.
Honestly, thank you so much. It's so kind. I appreciate it.
Well, Work in Progress premieres Sunday, December 8th at 11 p.m. Eastern and Pacific on Showtime.
What
was that from? Was that from?
I don't. Yeah, like, I'm gonna remember on the car
that.
Ride home.
I know. Paul Rubens, Pee-wee Herman.
Pee-wee
I think.
Herman, yeah.
Anyways, Abby McEnany.
McEnany.
Abby McEnany. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you so much. I had a ball. I really appreciate the time.
Me too.
Bye.
Thanks again to Abby McEnany for coming on the show. Work in Progress airs Sundays at 11 p.m. Eastern and Pacific on Showtime. For more information, visit showtime.com. If you enjoyed today's podcast, be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts and rate and review us while you're there. 5-star ratings and detailed reviews are one of the best ways for new listeners to discover the show. You can also follow us on Facebook or on Twitter at @KickAssNewsPod and recommend us to your friends on your social media. For more fun stuff, visit kickassnews.com, and I welcome your comments, questions, and suggestions at comments@kickassnews.com. For now, I'm Ben Mathis, and thanks for listening to Kick-Ass News.